this is an issue that's been before this committee and before this legislature, or some form of it, placing further restriction on pseudoephedrine products. So I would urge you to just bear that in mind when you testify, if you will. Senator Crow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. It is definitely my pleasure to present to the committee Senate Bill 160. For the record, my name is Jason Crowell. I represent the 27th Senatorial District and am honored and pleased to appear before the committee. Mr. Chairman, no matter how individuals testify on this bill, for or against, it is clear that the drug trafficking of methamphetamine, as it is used in this state, particularly in my neck of the woods in southeast Missouri, is a scourge that needs the attention. It is my hope that by introducing this committee to the judiciary, or introducing this bill to this committee, the Judiciary Committee, that we can begin a real discussion on what we can do with public policy to address the manufacturing of methamphetamine in the state of Missouri. In essence, Mr. Chairman, what my bill does is it seeks to put before the committee for consideration moving what we know is a necessary element, pseudoephedrine, to any methamphetamine production to a Schedule III controlled substance. I think that is a move that's worthy of discussion, a move that is necessary, and a move that has worked in the state of Oregon. This is not something that I came up with, I'm sorry to say, but it is a good idea that I'm sharing with the committee. I also have law enforcement officers who are far more familiar with the drug trafficking trade of methamphetamine and have not only dedicated their lives to the eradication of the methamphetamine drug trade, but they have risked their lives in doing so. And I'm sure the committee would like to hear from them for more detail.
Are there any questions for the sponsor? Thank you. You can call your first witness.
Come on up, Jason.
Uh-oh, show and tell. Is it Deputy Sheriff or is it Officer?
Deputy Sheriff, sir.
Okay. Deputy, you haven't brought any contraband in here, have you?
No, sir.
Okay, thank you. Welcome, and thank you, sir, for the explanation you gave me the other day.
No problem, sir. I'm here to testify on behalf of Senate Bill 160. It is the bill, it is the silver bullet that has been staring the state in the face since 1996 to end meth labs in the state of Missouri. Since 2000, we have put forth bill after bill, as you are aware, in this committee to make pseudoephedrine a Schedule III and have taken baby steps along the way through 2001, 2003, and 2005 to lead us to where we're at today. I'm a police officer, and I took an oath to protect and serve. I'm not a paid lobbyist, and I have absolutely nothing to gain from being before you today other than to protect and serve the people that I took an oath to protect and serve. And I want you all to keep this issue in perspective. We're talking about one drug that does nothing other than stop a runny nose. This is not the cure for cancer. This doesn't even cure the common cold. This drug stops a runny nose. But just in the same way, if you want to make chocolate chip cookies, you have to have chocolate chips. You can have all the flour you want, all the vanilla you want, all of the baking powder you want. You cannot make chocolate chip cookies without chocolate chips. You cannot make methamphetamine in the state of Missouri without pseudoephedrine hydrochloride. You can have all the ether, you can have all the anhydrous ammonia, you can have all the lithium batteries you want. But without pseudoephedrine hydrochloride, you're not going to be able to make methamphetamine. The other side is here because it's a money issue. They'll tell you that they want to make sure that patients have access to this drug. Access equals money. When they have access to this drug, the pharmaceutical companies make money, and they have been making money off of this drug since meth labs started in 1994 in the state of Missouri and continue to make money off of it every time someone manufactures methamphetamine. They're going to tell you that they want to see electronic monitoring in the state of Missouri. I'm here to tell you that electronic monitoring does nothing more than identify more suspects for police to arrest. Electronic monitoring is right now in California, Arizona, Kentucky, Tennessee, Arkansas, and Oklahoma. In every state except for Tennessee, who stayed almost even, in every state, meth labs went up. Kentucky has the premier version. They spent $800,000 of state money to enact a stop sale system in Kentucky, and they went up 47% last year. They went from 271 labs to 411 labs in 1 year in a state with a stop sale system. It does not curtail meth labs. The entire country went up by 1,500 labs last year. This is because of what the country of Mexico has done. In 2005, when we passed the latest legislation and the CMEA passed, we believed that Mexican cartels would come into the United States with methamphetamine and flood the market over what was being produced rurally. What happened was Mexico has banned pseudoephedrine as of January 1 of this year. They haven't made it a scheduled narcotic. They haven't outlawed it. They have banned it in their country. And Mexican cartels are starved to get pseudoephedrine. When they can't get pseudoephedrine, they can't make meth. Our addicts need methamphetamine, and now they are turning to manufacturing methamphetamine. A box of cold tablets in Missouri at the current time on the black market sells for $50 a box. A box you can buy for $10 at Walgreens can be sold to a meth maker for $50. In Kentucky, who I was just with Van Ingram, who is the head of their association in Kentucky, it is selling for $75 a box. And we no longer have just meth manufacturers and meth addicts out buying cold tablets. We have coke addicts, we have crack addicts, we have people who use marijuana and prescription drugs. We have individuals who are out of work and are trying to find a way to make money. Last week in my county on Thursday evening, officers tracked people buying pills from pharmacy to pharmacy in our county. When they pulled the vehicle over, it was occupied by an 18-year-old girl, her two parents, and her boyfriend. As officers approached the vehicle, the parents and the boyfriend of the 18-year-old girl advised her to hide the pills on her body, and she internally stuffed them inside of herself. She was later taken to the emergency room after hemorrhaging in the county jail and had to have the 88 pills surgically removed. This happens constantly. In southeast Missouri, officers sat for 1 day outside of two pharmacies and arrested 27 individuals and found three meth labs. All electronic monitoring does is highlights individuals who are buying over the legal amount or buying to the legal amount constantly in the system. We know who these people are.
Let me give you some direction here and with questions, okay, because there are some things that you told me that I thought were particularly helpful. Can you give us some numbers on meth labs over the last three years? You made mention of it, but if you can give us numbers.
In 2005, in September of 2005, the Schedule 5 and the CMEA came into full effect, and meth labs dropped off from 2,700 to 2,200 in 2005. In 2006 and in 2007, the state levels were at 1,284 and 1,285, respectively. The numbers this year are at 1,487, a 200-lab jump in 1 year's time, and that is due entirely to the fact that we can no longer get our hands on Mexican methamphetamine.
Okay, now, Oregon, they passed the Schedule 3, exactly what Senator Crowell proposes. What happens to their meth lab count?
Their meth labs were up over 400. They passed Schedule 3 legislation with the help of Rob Bovet, and last year they charted 19. They went from 20 in 2007 to 19 in 2008. Now, the numbers I am quoting,
they went from 20 to
19. They were at over 400.
Okay.
And they dropped to 20 and then to 19. These numbers that I'm quoting you
after the enactment.
The numbers I'm quoting you are from the El Paso Intelligence Center. They are the stats that the federal government relies upon in processing and giving federal money to states. After 2001, all states had to report their meth lab incidents, which covered chemical seizures, meth labs, and dump sites to El Paso to receive federal money. And these numbers are generated by the sheriff's departments, the state patrol, and the police departments.
Okay. The next question or issue I'd like you to address, because the pharmaceutical boys are getting ready to come down here and tell us that we are going to dramatically increase the suffering of cold, those that suffer with head and cold, flu season folks. And you have, I want to give you a chance to address that issue now.
This is what we seek to make Schedule 3. Sudafed, Actifed, numerous other products that contain sudafedrine hydrochloride, and that's to stop a runny nose. So that's what we seek to make Schedule 3.
And that's what you say right now can be sold for $58.
$50 a box.
And how much can we buy it from one of their clients?
$10.
Okay, go ahead.
Here's the other things that are sold on the shelves right now that stop a runny nose. There's Benadryl. There's Tylenol Sinus with phenylephrine. There's Claritin. Hall's Mouth Drops with Vicks. Zyrtec. Zicam. Afrin Nose Spray. And Sudafed PE, phenylephrine. Now, if they're marketing all of these products to stop a runny nose, why do we need that one? Why do we need the one that can be transformed by losing one oxygen molecule?
Well, they're getting ready to tell us that that one works dramatically better than all of these. That's, I can just predict that's getting ready to happen.
Then why are they marketing all of these to stop a runny nose?
Do you have any efficacy studies on PE versus...
I know that in the country of Mexico, when they banned sudafedrine, they changed the dosage unit from a 10-milligram dosage unit to a 15-milligram dosage unit per dose. They increased it by 50%, by 5 milligrams.
How many people have died now that Mexico doesn't carry this?
People are dying all over the United States, all over the Midwest. The Midwest, Missouri and its 8 border states, make up over 57% of all the labs found in the United States. And the 6 counties in and around St. Louis County make up nearly 40% of all labs found in the state of Missouri. And it's because people have the ability to go from store to store to store. And their bill or their idea of electronic monitoring does not stop that. What it does is it increases criminal activity because it forces more people into criminal activity and broadens the base of individuals out buying.
In okay, paper, Deputy, let me go ahead and see if there's anybody that has any questions for you. The deputy has an extensive and broad knowledge of the history of fighting methamphetamine in our state. So I would encourage anybody that has specific questions, either ask them now. I'm sure the deputy would also make available to you his phone number so that if any committee member had a question. Yes, Senator Goodman.
I just wanted to ask what county you're with.
Franklin County.
Franklin. They seem very lucky to have you. You've done a great presentation. Thank you.
Thank you. And the deputy will also, and this is I found very interesting, give you a primer on the different types of illegal drugs and why, how methamphetamine fits in and trend lines with other. We had an extensive discussion. He can answer lots of questions. Good resource. Any other questions for the deputy? Okay, deputy, thank you very much. We appreciate your time. Anybody else here to testify? If you would. Would you mind leaving those there for a while? Thank you.
Thanks, Jess.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Mick Covington, registered lobbyist with the Missouri Sheriff's Association. We support this bill.
Thank you. Any questions for the sheriffs? Thank you, Mr. Covington. Mr. Lineback.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, on behalf of the Missouri Police Chiefs Association, we want to go on record in support of this bill. And like the W said before, it is the silver bullet we've been looking at for a number of years.
Senator Crowell, Senator, this is a good point to note. This is not going to eliminate methamphetamine in this state, is it? Because we now have one of the fastest growing areas is abuse of prescription medication. And this would become prescription medication, but you're not suggesting this is going to eliminate methamphetamine use. You're just saying, look, if you have to go get a script from a doctor, it's going to dramatically reduce it, as it has in Oregon.
Yeah, you're going to eliminate. And Deputy Sheriff Grillner wasn't able to tell you how this works. It's called smurfing. You're going to eliminate basically people being able to jump around and do this. One of the interesting things, and Jason has got the statistics on this, as he shared with me, If every individual in Missouri had a cold at the same time for the same duration, they so greatly consume more of this product in a calendar year than colds exist in the state of Missouri. Everyone knows, whether they testify against this bill or not, that this product is being used in the manufacture of methamphetamine. They know it. The profits are so great, we don't have that many colds in the state of Missouri. We just don't. And I think that's the point that Jason has always made with me and law enforcement has made. We don't have that many colds if all of them were being used for this purpose.
I've always wondered why, you know, a la tobacco, there wasn't some kind of litigation. And I understand that the way it works is the manufacturers actually send these to distributors, and that there's a layer of distributors underneath that probably are more thinly capitalized, because eventually that lawsuit's coming. Because it's impossible that they don't know that a huge percentage of their profit over the years is coming from methamphetamine.
And whether it's blind ignorance or willfulness collaboration, I don't know the definition of.
Senator Justice.
Thank you. Do you know, Senator, and if you don't and someone else wants to answer this, it's fine, the products that have the pseudoephedrine, not just on their own but in conjunction with another product, I'm thinking of, for instance, Claritin D, which is not the Claritin you have there in front of you, but it has the pseudoephedrine. You still have to go and show your ID and sign all the stuff to buy it. Can that be used to make methamphetamine, or does it have to be the straight-up stuff on
Jason
its own?
Jason can probably come back up and answer those questions if you would.
Ma'am, every tablet, every elixir, and every gel tab that contains any amount of pseudoephedrine can be used. In northern Missouri in 2005, just after the bill passed, we had four elixir labs where they were using liquid forms of cold medications that had pseudoephedrine in it. We've seen gel tab labs where they're extracting the pseudoephedrine from the gel tabs. When they can't get their hands on, or when the price becomes too high for the straight pseudoephed with pseudoephedrine in it, they will turn to whatever they can. They must have pseudoephedrine.
So you're telling me that the tablets that they're not a gel tab, they're not an elixir, the tablets that have some pseudoephedrine in them can be somehow used to make methamphetamine? Like if you had the Claritin there, but you had the kind with pseudoephedrine in it.
Yes, we see Claritin D all the time. Claritin D, we see Advil Cold and Sinus, which has ibuprofen and pseudoephedrine in it. We see...
Is that common?
Yes, ma'am. We see it all the time because a lot of the pharmacies have gone to moving the 12-hour and the 24-hour straight pseudoephed off the shelves, and they're discriminating on people when they come in. If you don't look like you have a cold, or if you look like somebody they believe is making meth, they'll tell you they're out of that. Pharmacists do that all over the eastern side of the state already, but they will sell you one of the combination products, and they will turn around and sell the combination product to someone making meth. The combination products contain a 30 or a 60 milligram dose of pseudoephedrine in them, and they crush the pills, add the same additives, and use them in the same way as they do the pure tablets. It happens all the time. They told us this in 2001 and 2003 that they weren't using the multi-ingredient tablets. What do they know? Ma'am, I've been in 800 labs in my county and around the state, and I have helped investigate all of them, and I have seen and picked up the boxes. I have followed people from pharmacy to pharmacy as they buy pill after pill and box after box and go from pharmacy to pharmacy with four and five people in the car. They will buy whatever they can find, especially if it's on sale.
So do you think it would be an improvement, though, if we could just do, I mean, if this bill just applied to products that were 100% pseudoephedrine, would that help?
Only if you want to see my smiling face back here next year asking you to move everything else. They will overcome. They will adapt. They have nothing to do all day long but make dope.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Smith was next, and then Senator Cunningham.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to see if the sponsor could get, I know me and perhaps other members of the committee, the statistics from Oregon, if you have them.
I have them with me, sir.
Oh, yeah,
actually, they are. If you open the packets that were given to you, there will be a slide presentation, a PowerPoint presentation with the EPIC numbers in it. And if you go to the second or third page, you'll show the national numbers of 07 and 08. I can supply the committee all the way back to 2001, which was the first year that EPIC began charting those numbers nationwide.
Senator Smith, any others?
No.
Okay. Senator Cunningham?
As I recall, you and I talked about this with regard to contact because I really did have a coal. I looked all over Washington, D.C. for contact and couldn't find it. Finally found it in one store and bought everything they had because I thought I'd never find it again. Is contact in this, and remind me?
I think some forms of contact had pseudoephedrine in it. I don't know if they currently do or not. Without reviewing the box, I don't know whether contact contains pseudoephedrine or phenylephrine at this point.
Oh, okay.
I know that sign-off. When Oregon passed its legislation, sign-off was on the radio that day with ads regarding their changeover from pseudoephedrine to phenylephrine. The industry is ready to go to phenylephrine if they need to, if it'll make money for them.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Mayer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Jason, it's good to see you back. And,
thank you, sir.
Hate that under the circumstances. And I commend you on what you're doing. Obviously, this will be a great piece of legislation to get passed to try to put an end to this scourge. And I'm just thinking off the top of my head, do you see this this pseudoephedrine becoming much like the pain-killing drugs? I'm talking about hydrocodone and those others. Will that be the next step? I'm talking about people will somehow sell them or kids will get a hold of them out of the cabinet or there's a distinction here, isn't there? Talking about between those two types of medications. Obviously, they do different things, but I'm talking about in what might happen illegally with these types of drugs.
You're talking about the diversion of these drugs from a medical use.
Yes.
Yeah, and it won't happen, and here's why. And it didn't happen in Oregon, and it hasn't happened in Oregon, and here's why. If I'm going to go to a doctor now at this point and get a prescription diverted to me, why would I get 90 or 180 pseudoephedrine tablets when I can ask him for amphetamine salts, the drug that is the stimulant drug that I'm making on my own? I'll ask the doctor for Ritalin. I'll ask the doctor for something else. If I'm going to find an unscrupulous doctor who's going to divert medication to people, I'm not going to ask for Sudafed where I can only go out and make maybe 3 or 4
limited
grams.
Amount.
I'm going to go ahead and just get the drug I so badly need, and I'm going to have him prescribe to me some amphetamine salts. And these studies, Oklahoma, for example, sir, says, and they like to quote Oklahoma as going down 90% in meth labs. Well, they went up in meth labs last year like everybody else. And the other thing about Oklahoma is when they quote their stats, they didn't quote this one. And that is that a meth lab caught in progress cost the state approximately $350,000 per lab. Now, a third of the labs found in the state of Missouri last year were in progress labs, which means people were prosecuted in those cases. If you take those cases, just those cases, not all 1,400, but if you just take the cases where people were actually caught in meth labs, that was a cost to the state of Missouri of $173 million in lost revenue, insurance costs, health care claims, investigative costs, lab costs, defense costs, incarceration costs, rehabilitation costs, you name it, it's all in there. And they want to tell you that we're going to lose $400,000 in sales tax revenue. We'd have to lose that 90 times over to get to where we're at.
Right, and I appreciate all that, and I wouldn't challenge that. Let me ask you, and maybe you've already answered this question, how many other states surrounding us have made scheduled three controlled substances? What surrounding states?
Oregon has. The state of Washington, the state of Indiana, and the state of Georgia are attempting to do so.
So none of them that surround us, huh? Do you see a lot of trafficking in pseudoephedrine products?
Not across. We see some across state lines on bordering states, but very minimally. Jasper County had always been a high county for methamphetamine labs in the state of Missouri, as high as 171, almost 200 labs back in 2005 and 2004. And they dropped off to almost less than 30 labs and came roaring back last year over 100 labs. And they are a border state. But we have Arkansas and Oklahoma that border Jasper County that both have electronic monitoring, and it's not stopping Jasper County from soaring in labs.
So we still have states, obviously, every one of them around us, that have not passed this law at this point.
They are looking to us. When I talked to Van Ingram from Kentucky, when I talked to Tommy Loving from Tennessee, when I talked to Fran Fleener from Arkansas, they're looking to us. They say they can't get it passed in their state until we pass it. And the reason is we're the number one state and have been since 2001. And they say if we can't fix the problem, why should they? If we're willing to be number one for that long, if we're willing to put up with 16,000 labs in 9 years, why should they do anything about it?
So how do their laws compare to ours presently? I'm talking about our present laws versus, say, Kentucky, Arkansas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Iowa. Have they pretty much followed what we've done here? I think Oklahoma was a step ahead of us, weren't they?
They were about a year ahead of us. We followed Oklahoma with their legislation. Iowa is somewhat stiffer than ours. They have a 7.5 gram limit per month and a smaller daily limit. Most of the states fall under the CMEA and have a 9 gram and a 9 gram limit and a 3.6 gram limit per day limit. And electronic tracking does nothing other than track those purchases, which we track. We have electronic tracking going on in St. Louis County, Franklin County, St. Charles County, and Jefferson County, and all of those counties went up meth labs last year.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you, Jason. I appreciate you being here. Okay. Next witness in favor of the bill. How many more are in favor of the bill?
I think that's it.
Oh. Okay. We've got one more after you. Welcome, sir.
Good evening.
Your name is?
My name is Jim Wallace, and I'm testifying on behalf of the Senate Bill 160. I was asked by Detective Grellner to come today, and I gladly did so. Based on my experience of 20 years working with children and families, just to brief you, I was a deputy juvenile officer in St. Charles County and in Lincoln County. I worked for the Division of Youth Services for in Lincoln County, Missouri, and covered the northeastern part of the state. And I'm currently a vice president of adolescent treatment services for a substance abuse treatment provider. And I just feel like this bill is a proactive approach to limiting access to drugs like pseudoephedrine. The adolescent youth that we typically work with are skilled at shoplifting. Getting a way to limit that access is a proactive approach, and in my observation, is the way to go instead of acting reactively after the damage is done to try and put some proactive approaches and address the situation before it becomes a problem. Detective Grellner briefed and let me know that in 2006. 51 of 55 families who had children removed from them in Franklin County had active meth labs in those homes. I can tell you, giving a tour to a St. Louis City judge last week, he talked about a 14-year-old meth addict that he's currently has under supervision and covering programs from St. Charles County to Franklin County. To Lincoln County, I know that this is not just a urban, but or not just a rural, but it's a urban issue as well. So I'm in support of this. And
thank you, Mr. Wallace. Appreciate it. Any questions for Mr. Wallace? Next witness. Thank you, Mr. Wallace. Appreciate you being here.
Good evening. Joan Gummels with the Missouri Attorney General's Office. We just want to go on record as supporting this and all legislative attempts to deal with this chronic problem that's been very well described with you, to you, and that includes fully funding the electronic logging system as well.
Thank you, Ms. Gummels. Any questions for the AG? Thank you. Anybody else here testify in favor of the bill? All right, now we're going to hear from those that are in opposition. Mr. Overfelt.
My name is David Overfelt. I am the registered lobbyist for the Missouri Retailers Association and the Missouri Grocers Association. Quite frankly, we have not funded the electronic program in this state. We just passed it last year. It is not up and running. We do not have an idea what it could do, but we do know that in Oklahoma, we saw a drop from their high from about 90% of labs. They've had a few maybe increases, but of course you can smurf in Missouri and surrounding states. I'd like to say that in Kentucky, this is just starting in Kentucky. It started in June. We haven't seen it go into effect. So, I mean, maybe they had lab increases, but we'll just see when the electronic point of sale, which would stop the sale and stop the smurfing, when that goes into effect, it will make a huge difference. I'd like you to point out, if you look under methamphetamine from this was pulled off today from the DEA, it points out very clearly that a majority of meth comes in from Mexican and California cartels in the western side of Missouri. It's predominant on the eastern side and throughout the state. I point that out, and I'd also like to point out, and when I handed out a short article mentioning one law enforcement officer saying that we used to have mom-and-pop labs, smaller labs. We're still arresting the same amount of people, but it's being shipped in. I just want to point that out. And why I want to point that out is because you can do this, but you're still, we believe, going to have the same problem, the same amount of people arrested in a different form, same homes broken up. Hard direct cost to clean up a lab, probably up to $4,000. I think when they come up with their numbers, they're looking at a lot of indirect costs. They're looking at foster care. They're looking at broken families, courts. I mean, you can add that all up, but direct costs to that lab, two to four. I just wanted to point that out. You're going to lose the sales tax revenue, which is quite sizable. In Kansas, it was around 240-some thousand. They did a study on it. We feel it would be double that there. I did some numbers.
Mr. Overfeld, do you have any doubt that a certain percentage of your clients' sales are to methamphetamine producers?
There's probably no doubt that that's the case. And I think we do everything we can to prevent it. My members were the first one to jump on board to get this behind the pharmacies before they passed it federally. I took a lot of heat for that.
Did you take a look at the Oregon statistics to see how that had affected?
I have not. I honestly feel the better way is to do electronic. I feel that when you go with Oregon, you're going to have a lot of cost to the state's Medicaid program, to the Missouri Consolidated Healthcare Program. You're going to have to cover physicians' visits. Then you talk to talk about what it's going to cost the consumer who doesn't have health care, who might have to go to the emergency room, because decongestants do make a difference. And I'd like to also say that a lot of these are antihistamines up here. They're not decongestants. They're two different things, but they treat different ailments. Claritin is an antihistamine. It's basically for allergies. But, you know, a lot of times you'll get runny nose with allergies. My wife has to take Claritin D. She cannot take the PE. I cannot take the PE. I get very ill when I take PE. But it's just some things you have to consider, and why pseudoephedrine, for what its intended purpose is, it does work. And it works for me. I've had problems using the nasal sprays. I've gotten sick. I've gotten sinus infections. I have tried that route, and I still do, if I can get to go away in a day. It does work.
Have your Senator Crowell, what he said about the amount of pseudoephedrine that's sold in this state, and you looked at the incidence of symptoms in this state or of colds that would cause every statistic ever seen suggests the same thing, that the sale of pseudoephedrine is driven primarily by methamphetamine users. I mean, the demand is the real demand for cold remedies for its intended purpose is much smaller than actual sales. Have you looked into that, those statistics at all?
You've piqued my interest to make those inquiries. I will see what we can look at. I'm sure there's something to say to that, but this is a very popular product because it works. I don't know. We'll do what we can to find out what we can there.
Are there any questions for the retailers? Thank you, Mr. Overfeld. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I turned it in earlier.
Mr. Holloway.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Tom Holloway with the Missouri State Medical Association, and we very reluctantly rise to express some concerns about this bill. We We fully understand the scourge and the tragedy of meth addiction, and we have long supported legislation to try to curb not just methamphetamine problems, but the entire spectrum of the illicit drug trade. But we're concerned that this bill is going to create some unintended hardships for a lot of people. Thousands of Missourians rely on pseudoephedrine to relieve their misery. Contrary to some of the previous testimony, and I see this as a great display here, there are no effective over-the-counter equivalents for pseudoephedrine. I suspect that the decongestants that are here all have the major ingredient phenylephrine, and that's typically touted as the number one alternative for pseudoephedrine, but it is not effective. And that the real-world experience is that it doesn't work. And
do you have any studies suggesting
that? You were so prescient to ask about that previously. Several recent studies bear that out. I have an article here from the Journal of Allergy and Clinical Immunology, British Journal of Clinical Pharmacology, a journal called Pharmacotherapy, British Medical Journal, a journal called Formulary, and there's a University of Florida study. All of these are peer-reviewed, scientific, valid articles, and they all indicate that phenylephrine is not an effective substitute for pseudoephedrine. So what this bill is going to do for allergy sufferers and people with the common cold symptoms, they're going to either have to suffer or they're going to be forced to go to their doctor's office where they don't need to be, sit in a waiting room that's full of sick people who are trying to see the doctor, pay a $20, $25 copay to get the prescription, and then go to the pharmacy to get that prescription filled. And we think that's a hardship that's going to waste a lot of the patient's time, a lot of their money, and it's going to be a drain on the resources in the physician's office. And we fully support the intent of the proponents and the sponsor of the bill, but we just cannot support this particular.
This is going to send thousands and thousands of people into your doctor's offices to write them the check for that visit. How could this not be a huge boon to primary care physicians? Goodness, that's surprising.
The very initial testimony from one of the proponents was that this is all about money, and this is quite the contrary. This is not going to be about money. We oppose this.
Okay, any questions for the doctors? Thank you, Mr. Holloway. Oh, there is a question. Senator Cunningham.
I'm going to go back to my example before because I think I fell into the same thing you said. Does Contact have Sudafedin, whatever that drug is, in it?
I do not know.
Oh, okay. Because I think what happened is I tried something else when I couldn't find it. It didn't work. Only Contact worked. And so I would really like to know that, if it worked. I mean, I don't know how I'm going to vote on this bill. I hear what you're saying. I don't want to have to go to a doc to get, something to stop my cold. But is there anything in the middle? I mean, we've got to cure this problem, but at the same time, the hurdle that we're putting patients and docs through may be big, too. Is there anything in the middle that we can do to make it work both ways?
Not in the literature. But what you're going to have to do is try all these different things until you find one that you think works best. Either that or go see your doctor under this legislation.
Okay.
I had one other thing.
My experience has been that nothing that's in front of you, and also none of your members, have ever done anything to help me get over a cold. It's pitiful. Thank you.
I've had lots of recommendations.
Senator Justice.
Senator Cunningham, I've got your answer.
Oh, good.
Contact has changed their formula, and
yes.
So you will find that the old Contact no longer exists.
The old Contact works. The new doesn't.
And the new does not have pseudoephedrine.
Does it have the other one in it?
Yes.
Okay, that answers my question.
It's
Thank
amazing
you.
What
Dr.
a computer, what you can do with a computer these days. Exactly. I wish Senator Nodler was here. All right.
And Senator Cunningham, you evidently cornered the market now on that you bought up all of the in Washington, D.C. There was one other thing I wanted to, Senator Mayer, you asked about some of the other states. In Kansas, just last month, they put together a task force that studied this very issue, and I'll be happy to leave that with you. They ruled against this proposal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody else here to testify against this bill? We've yet to see the pharmaceutical manufacturers.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Ron Fitzwater. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the Missouri Pharmacy Association. We just want to go on record also of being in opposition to the bill, and I think, as our colleagues have indicated, obviously there's nobody in this room that would not like to see this problem solved. We just don't think this is the best way to do it at this time in the state of Missouri. And I think you've been told that there are other states that are looking at it. The truth of the matter is Oregon is the only one that has taken this step. I think the jury is out as to whether that's going to be successful. Long-term, Oregon and Missouri are much different. You know, as we look at states surrounding us, I think they're looking at alternatives as we have worked with. And, you know, we worked very cooperatively with the former administration and the legislature as we began this process of putting in what we currently have in the system. We're very supportive, even last year, of taking it even farther and going with the entire prescription drug monitoring program, which also included some of the meth tracking, which fortunately the legislature at least approved that piece of it. We think that if we were to fund that piece, what we hear as we talk to our colleagues in other states is the electronic tracking log is working, and I think what we can do here in Missouri will even help surrounding states when their folks can't come into the state. So we think there are other alternatives out there. The legislature has spent a lot of time addressing this issue. I mean, I think we've all tried to give a little bit. We've all tried to work on it with the understanding that it is a critical problem in our state.
Did your association oppose the electronic tracking?
We did not. We supported that. In fact, we supported, as I indicated, the broad bill, which had the prescription drug monitoring program, which would have taken care of some of the other control products in the state, in addition to the electronic log, which eventually was the only piece of the bill was able to be sustained.
Have you spoken with your colleagues in Oregon, and do you have any estimate on how much your membership will lose in revenue if this is moved to Schedule 3?
I have not talked to my colleagues in Oregon. For your first question, Oregon is a much smaller state as far as the organized pharmacy there, so they're kind of in flux as far as the association. We have talked to colleagues in Washington and Utah, a couple contiguous states, and both of them are very aggressively going in the opposite direction of what this bill does. They're looking at electronic logs, looking at other opportunities that pulls everybody into the system so that we're all working on the same page. I mean, it's difficult when you swing the pendulum so far that you lose a lot of the folks that would help make this system work and help work in it. You know, I think, you know, again, we have worked very cooperatively over the last few years in designing a system and passing legislation that will have an impact in Missouri. What we need to do now is to fund that system.
Thank you. Any questions for the pharmacist? Thank you. Appreciate you being here. Welcome.
Thank you, Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Mandy Hagen, and I represent the Consumer Healthcare Products Association. We are the manufacturers. Here to oppose this bill.
What companies actually manufacture pseudoephedrine?
The primary ones are, of course, the Claritin D makers are Schering Plow. Johnson & Johnson has a couple of products, Wyeth, Bayer, GlaxoSmithKline, Procter & Gamble, and a couple of generic manufacturers. So when you see like the CVS brands, those are made by two companies that also we represent.
Has the industry conducted any studies on what percentage of the pseudoephedrine revenues come from methamphetamine manufacture?
Well, the problem with estimating diversion is that no one has access to the logs about who purchases these products except for law enforcement. So there's no way for us to go through and look at purchase records and find out who bought them, who exceeded the limits, what ended up happening to those products. Only law enforcement has access to that information. And I have never seen any estimates of diversion, either based on states or based on the whole nation. What we have seen, the only estimate that I've seen that seems to be based on actual sales data, is actually from Kentucky. And Kentucky's been mentioned here because they have an electronic tracking system. It's only been in place since June 1st was when it actually went online. It's mandatory statewide. Every pharmacy in the state has to log every single pseudoephedrine sale. So if you go from one store to another, you cannot exceed the limits. You cannot go around their 3.6 gram per day or 9 gram per month limit. And we'll have to wait and see whether that ultimately has a great reduction in their labs. But it is a real-time system, and it does stop you from going over the limits.
But what I understand is happening is that people that don't have anything else to do with methamphetamine manufacture, especially in hard economic times, they can go into a pharmacy, they can buy their $10 box and turn around and sell it for $50, $58.
Sure. That definitely happens.
Haven't we just created a massive black market that gets the methamphetamine manufacturers what they need, gets you all the revenues that you've been getting from sales that have nothing to do with that solving cold symptoms?
By tracking sales electronically, you mean?
Yeah, the electronic sales, isn't it only going to – we're going to have a new army of people that are going to help the methamphetamine manufacturers.
I think the same argument could be made for putting the products on prescription status, because when you go to RX status, what happens is those products are then exempt from the Federal Combat Meth Act. There are no federal limits to how much pseudoephedrine you can buy if you're getting a prescription. You could go and get your 90-day supply, which is 21 grams of pseudoephedrine at one time, and that's going to have a much higher street value than the 3.6 grams that you can buy in one day currently.
But you do have a gatekeeper there. You have a doctor that's a gatekeeper.
Mr. Chairman, the most abused drugs in this country are prescription drugs.
I understand that.
So we would just argue that either way, you're certainly going to have a reduction. I mean, there's no question. By putting it on prescription status, you will have a reduction. But our point is, and what I was getting to as far as the numbers of diversion, is that in Kentucky, where they actually stop people from going over the limits, if you go into your pharmacy and you've already bought your 3.6 grams for that day, and you try to buy your fourth gram, it stops you from buying it. But what they've done is they've compiled statistics on how many times that happens, who goes in and tries to go over the limits. And as it turns out, it's less than 1.5% of transactions that actually would be over the limit if they were allowed to go through. So Kentucky has stopped 1.5% of their sales because they would have gone over the limit.
But have they looked at the number of people that are coming back the very next day? So you've got a husband and a wife in a household, or you've got four or five members of a household who can go and buy. They go buy on day one. They buy right up to the limit. They come back on day two. They buy right up to the limit because it's a way of supplementing their income. How do you deal with them?
There is actually an analytical software available that goes along with the tracking system that checks for that very thing. People that have the same address, people that shop in groups at the same time, go to the same stores, it finds patterns. So it does give law enforcement a great tool to look at not only stopping sales, but you don't want to just stop the sales because then, like you say, people can still find some way to get around it. But by having your criminals actually show up, show ID, sign a logbook and say, this is where I live, it gives the law enforcement a great way to just find out who those people are and to actually go and get them off the street versus prescription status or anything else that doesn't record that information and doesn't
help. But see, that assumes that the person who's buying it, it's actually the criminal that's making the meth, and that's the problem, that we are creating with this electronic tracking a whole new class of folks. They turn around, they sell it to somebody else. That somebody else may not even be actually making the meth.
It's also illegal to exceed the limits, though. So those people are still breaking the law. Even if they're not the actual meth cook, they still need to be arrested. So they're breaking the law whether they're the ones that are ultimately doing the conversion or not. And, you know, you may have several people supplying one cook, and the DEA actually says in their recent report on this that does happen. There are people that pay homeless people to go and buy the products for them. That will take place again, whether it's a prescription product or whether it's being tracked electronically. The point is to be able to reduce the burden on law enforcement to find who these small-time offenders are so that they can focus on the bigger-time offenders. We still have the vast majority of meth coming in from Mexico. Mexican cartels simply get the raw ingredients now from Colombia. So if law enforcement was freed up to go after those big offenders because they didn't have to go around manually checking logbooks, which right now there's a million purchases here each year. In 2008, there was about a million boxes of pseudoephedrine sold in this state, and that's a million entries in a logbook that law enforcement would have to go and manually look at to figure out who's going over the limits. getting at the issue of profits and income, and I know this is what everybody wants to talk about, is how much money we make on these products. And we've been very forthcoming with the dollar amounts of sales here in Missouri, and we've let you know that it's $9.4 million approximately in sales here. That represents about 1.8% of the U.S. pseudoephedrine sales market over the counter. And that's also about 0.25% of the U.S. cough and cold market. So it's a very small market for us. But the issue is that this is a proposal that seeks to shift a new burden to the healthcare system to meet a law enforcement problem. And we feel that electronic tracking is the more appropriate and suitable way to do that. Oregon may have had a significant decrease in their labs and had 20 approximately or fewer labs in 2008, but so did 18 other states. Having huge reductions in meth labs is actually the norm in most states. You have 1.8% of the pseudoephedrine sales here. You have about 2% of the U.S. population, and you have 21% of the meth labs. It doesn't stand to reason that by putting further restrictions on these products as over-the-counter versus prescription is going to make the type of impact that you're looking for.
Yeah.
Those are pretty astounding statistics. Why do you think Missouri has such a huge number of meth labs more than the rest of the country?
I've thought about that a lot, and I wish I knew. I think central location. Other than that, probably law enforcement would be better equipped to answer that question. But it is the fact that you have almost a quarter of the nation's meth labs in 07 and in 08, but not a correspondingly strangely high number of pseudoephedrine sales here. You don't have an unusually high number. You have 1.8% of the sales. So it could be people buying out of state a little bit. The states around you don't have unusually high numbers either, but it could be partly that. It could be people getting raw ingredients from out of the country.
And so obviously we don't track that, and that's why we don't have any sales when it's coming in from Mexico or somewhere else. Is that right?
If they bring in finished meth or they bring in the raw pseudoephedrine from another country and use it to make meth, but they didn't buy it from a pharmacy, no, we would have no records of those purchases.
Senator, I have a question for you. I thought this was interesting that she said that if someone has a prescription, then that doesn't go through the electronic tracking.
It goes through BNDD records. I mean, every prescription is tracked even more severely than the electronic monitoring.
Oh, okay. So going through it's the prescription method of getting it is not going to stop our law enforcement from being able to track who has it, who's buying it. I mean, you know, hopefully they're not going to abuse it.
BNDD then gets involved. And why, if it goes through a prescription, the Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs can take your license to sell those drugs. So if you become a doctor shopper and you're one of these individuals that does this as the patients come through, the one person that knows more than anybody else who is a crooked doctor is the individual that's busting labs, because they see the same name on the prescription bottles for every drug house they raid. And to talk about the statistics, just for a minute, Senator, what I would find interesting if they would compile this way is they talk about the 1% of that we consume in Missouri, but what is that a function of our overall population base to other states' populations? I understand that that's a consumption overall, but I still think, and it's anecdotal and would like to have an honest discussion with you, that if everyone had a cold in Missouri, would we still need that much Sudafed that's being consumed? And if that's the case, then I think we can have an honest dialogue of a real diversion that's going on in the state of Missouri.
Can I just ask one more question?
Yeah, I don't really want to.
Okay,
counterpoint here.
No, I didn't want that. I mean, somebody who really knows, if we're not selling more, why in the world are we so high in meth labs?
Yeah.
I mean, what is the main reason?
I think, though, that there are going to be lots of different answers to that question. Law enforcement's going to say it's access to pseudoephedrine in retail outlets, and the pharmaceutical companies are going to say we don't know, but it's not that. So there's a lot of different.
That's the reason we have so many trucking companies. It's easy to get the product out of Missouri and ship it all over the nation.
Yeah, I think location definitely has something to do with it. But it is startling, a stark reality. We have 2% of the population. We have 21% of the methamphetamine labs in the country. And, you know, we've had some success with what we've done in the past, but it seems like the methamphetamine manufacturers come up with new ways to get it done. Any other questions? Yes, Senator Justice.
And this is for the witness, and if you don't know the answer, I understand. Do you know how much about that box of Sudafed costs?
Which one?
The one on the end with pseudoephedrine. I mean, do you have any clue?
Well, the average price is $9.
Okay.
This one's probably a little less because this is only 120 milligrams, 20 caplets. This is probably 6 or 7.
Okay.
I would say.
Well, my main concern, I guess, is that if you're lucky enough to have health insurance and can go to a doctor and find the time to go, you know, get the prescription that you need, most of my prescriptions are a $20 copay, and I just look at this as unreasonable on the consumer, and I just didn't know if you'd had any anecdotal or other studies that show that, I mean, it's kind of an access to healthcare in a sense where you're not going to have the same access to the drugs that you need that are effective if you don't have, you know, this in place. I didn't know if you had any.
Well, and that's the whole point of having over-the-counter drugs, so that you do alleviate some of those burdens on the healthcare system. And there's no studies on how much it would save consumers or the healthcare system keeping pseudoephedrine over-the-counter. But there are similar studies for other products that have switched, like heartburn medications. There was a recent study, and I believe the figure was $800 million that it saves consumers each year by being able to have an over-the-counter drug to use for heartburn. So that's certainly been studied for other products. And it's definitely, it's true that there are a huge savings to consumers for having an option. And I think it's worth noting that these products that are phenylephrine or a different decongestant, if you were going to use phenylephrine, you would have already switched. You wouldn't be going to the trouble of going to the pharmacy, subjecting yourself potentially to state and federal criminal prosecution because of going over the limits and going through all the trouble of the logs if you have tried these products and found that they work just as well for you. Pseudoephedrine is primarily for allergy sufferers. The question of how many colds there are in Missouri or how many people show up with cold symptoms to the doctor is really not relevant to pseudoephedrine sales because it's allergy sufferers that take the product every single day that need to have it over the counter. And they won't switch to phenylephrine because they've already tried it. If you know, then they don't have to go to the pharmacy and get it. So they would have already switched if it would work for them. And I just would like to close with saying that you guys are way ahead of several other states around you because you already have passed legislation to mandate electronic tracking, and your retailers support it. All we have to do is get the appropriations earmarked for it, and we're done, and we can make it happen. You're much closer to making it happen than other states are. I'm testifying tomorrow in Kansas in support of legislation there that would mandate electronic tracking. Iowa is waiting to hear back on a $750,000 grant that they applied for federally to pay for an electronic tracking system there, and they also have legislation. Illinois is considering doing this. Arkansas, Oklahoma, Kentucky, and Tennessee already do it. You could find yourselves surrounded by states that track electronically, and if you don't follow suit, then that's when you really have meth cooks coming into your state to get around the limits in other states.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. Anybody else here testify in opposition to the bill? Okay, that's going to conclude our hearing.